For those of a skeptical bent, when it comes to ghosts, well, there's a lot less here than meets the eye. For the believers, ghosts are as real as the living, and ghostly apparitions come in several flavors.
We go there. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
All right, it's that time of year, right? Halloween's just a couple days away, and I thought maybe we could talk about ghosts. There's a lot of shows on regarding ghost hunting right now and haunted homes. What does the church teach regarding these disembodied spirits, if you will? Should we as Catholics believe in them? Phantoms, poltergeists, spirits, specters. Ghosts have a lot of names. They really do. Do Catholics really believe in ghosts? What's the church say? Are some of these manifestations demonic? Are some of them purgatorial souls? I think the answer to both those questions is yes. But what about this concept of a disembodied soul, somehow trapped, an earthbound spirit? There are claims that deceased ones can be stuck here on earth because of an obsession or unfinished business. They refuse to go to the light, perhaps fearful of judgment. Is that a Catholic principle? Well, I want to talk about it because that's one of the popular thoughts that have often been pushed regarding spirits. You know, this person wants to avenge their murder or their hidden treasure or whatever it might be. As I was sharing with you before the break, there's no doubt in my mind. Scripture is filled with references to ghosts from the Old Testament to the New Testament. Remember when Christ was walking on the water? Remember that particular encounter? And the apostles, they look out and they see Christ. And, of course, you don't expect Jesus to be walking on water. You don't expect any human to walk on water. They were caught in the middle of a storm, and Jesus came walking to them. Your first reaction is probably, that's a ghost. And Jesus said, hey, it's me, you know. In the resurrection accounts in Luke's gospel, the apostles, again, thought they were seeing a ghost. And once again, Jesus doesn't fault them for that thinking. What's he say? He says, touch me, see. You know, ghost does not have flesh and bones, as you can see I have. So, Jesus on two different occasions kind of referenced ghosts. There are other places in the Bible that dealt with it as well. As I was mentioning, King Saul going to the witch of Endor and having her summon the spirit of the prophet Samuel. In other words, there are spiritual realities. And some people, say that these spiritual realities are ghosts. Do spirits of the deceased exist? Yes, they do. We know they do. There is an afterlife, right? We know that great saints encountered them too, right? Padre Pio had many encounters with the departed, right? And so we know that these spirits do exist, but how do you discern them? I think that is one of the big questions I want to talk about today. And you're more than welcome to join us here. 888-914-9149. What is our duty as a Catholic? I mean, what does the church teach regarding these particular manifestations? Joining me today to give us some perspective on that is Dr. Paul Thigpen. He's an award-winning journalist. He wrote a book that I want to recommend to you. He's come out with 50 books, but here's one I think is probably appropriate. I'll give you two that I like. I have them both. One is called A Manual for Spiritual Warfare. And if you have disturbances in your home, if there's division in your life, if you're plagued by some sort of obsession or depression, or there's other types of things that are going on both either in the home or the life, this is an excellent, excellent book filled with rich prayers. And believe me, it's small, leather-bound. You could certainly use it, I think, to bring some peace. He also wrote a book called Saints Who Battled Satan. Two great recommendations, but it's great to have him here with us this afternoon. Doctor, welcome back.
True. Great to be here, buddy. Thanks for having me.
Always a delight. And thank you for your work. 50 books is an incredible accomplishment. That's pretty amazing. But I do love your spiritual warfare book. I think that's a must. Let's talk ghosts, okay? Ghosts seem like crazy things. Now, I would say some manifestations clearly are purgatorial souls. We know Padre Pio had those encounters where these apparitional figures. I mean, there were knocks on the doors. People, the friars there in San Giovanni would open the door, and the spirit would ask for Padre Pio. These people saw a they thought it was a person, and Pio would later say, no, those are purgatorial souls on their way to heaven to thank me or seeking my prayers. We do know that there's a lot of demonic activity that takes place, and I think some of these manifestations, these sinister ones, are demons. What about this other concept of a disembodied soul trapped between this life and the next? Is there any merit to that? What does the church teach regarding ghosts and those particular spirits?
Well, you know, we want to make sure, and I think you've already begun, that we define ghosts so that we know what we're talking about. That you go to Webster, the first definition there is that it's a disembodied, like you said, disembodied human spirit. So that has been deceased. So someone who lived on earth, they died, body and soul separated. Now the soul is without the body. The spirit is without the body. Just basic Catholic teaching, sure, that's what we believe happens at death, that the body and the soul separate. and in fact, everyone except Our Lady, who's a saint in heaven, we would fit into that category of ghosts because they haven't received their bodies back after they were separated from them in death. So you've got, so the first question is just, of course, the Catholic Church allows for ghosts rightly understood in that sense. And then that helps us to see that we're not talking, if the demons are something different, of course. Mm-hmm. The demons are not human spirits. They are fallen angels. They're not ETs. They're not extraterrestrial intelligences. Even poltergeist, I would say, when you study the literature on that, that seems to be something else. A lot of folks just conclude it's all...
I agree.
You know, all poltergeists are demonic, and there's actually another possibility we could talk about. But... So with that definition, we can affirm that ghosts do exist. And then with, as you mentioned, some of the scriptures will tell us that disembodied spirits have come back. So we have the story, again, of Saul having the witch of Endor calling back the spirit of Samuel. Some people say, well, that was since he was a necromancer and that was something forbidden by God's law, it must have been a demon. You can make that argument. St. Augustine looked at that and said, well, right, the scripture keeps calling it. He's calling it Samuel, not a demon, so it must have been Samuel. New Testament, to me, the clearest example is in the Mount of Transfiguration. Moses had been dead for centuries, but his spirit shows up. Jesus sees him, the three, Peter, James, and John all see him, so that's definitely a ghost. So, yes, it can happen if you count things like dreams and visions.
Yeah.
You also have Onias and Jeremiah who show up in Maccabees. They were deceased, and in a dream. So all that means that, it can happen. Then the question becomes, like you said, how much are they allowed to do? Are they purgatorial spirits? And we have, for a lot of cases, we have evidence from, as far back as Pope St. Gregory the Great in the 6th century, the 500s, he collected stories like that. But you have lots of stories that are credible from the people who have reported them, in which the apparition, I'll just call it that in general, asks for prayer or tries to gain someone's forgiveness or does something that's good, in which case it really seems as if God has allowed them in their purgatorial purging process to interact with human beings. But then you've got other kind of things like you're talking about, that are there some who refuse to go to the light, who stay around? And I don't think the church is pronounced on that, but it sure sounds to me like doesn't seem to go too well to me with the notion of the individual judgment.
That's exactly judgment. Right. That's my problem with that. I can see demonic manifestations. I can even see purgatorial souls. According to St. Thomas Aquinas in his Summa there, he says the souls of dead who are in heaven can manifest themselves as the living on their own initiative, which I found interesting. They're not hauntings. They're not meant to terrify people. Rather, it's kind of a saintly apparition. And they never come, with fear. But the souls that are trapped between this world and the next, as a lot of people like to say is the case, these mediums and others say, this person can't go to the light unless you forgive them or whatever the story is. I mean, you have these sagas. It doesn't seem to stick with me because when we die, we have this experience. We have this life review. We have this particular judgment, don't we, where we're evaluated and based on how we conducted our life, whether we lived for God or we failed that test, determines where we're going to spend our eternity. It's not like we say, I don't want to go to light. I just kind of want to roam around here for a little bit. That never really seemed to sink with me. It's like, do I have a choice? Well, I didn't live a good life. I kind of want to hang around. I wouldn't mind being a ghost.
It just doesn't seem to jive with, you know, what else we know from Catholic teaching about that, that we don't have a choice about that. But like I said, from the church's experience, and it does fit with church teaching, that God might on occasion allow someone who's being purged in the purgatorial process to appear so that they can either help someone or can be helped by someone. It's a powerful story. There are a lot of stories that were collected by some priest scholars who were studying this phenomenon in the 1800s, late 1800s, early 1900s. And it was a powerful story. I don't remember all the details, but that a priest reported how one night, it's in London. Of course, it's raining. It's kind of dark. It's like Halloween, but it's not. Yeah. And knock at the door, and a woman dressed in the attire of the time says, "You must come with me quickly. There's a young man who needs your ministry before he dies." And so the priest gets on his jacket coat and goes with her. She follows her. She goes very quickly. She gets to the area there where the place is, and she points to the door and says, "He's in there." He starts to go there. He looks back. She's gone. He goes to the door, and the servant answers, and he says, I've been summoned here, that there's a man who is very ill, or, you know, is about to die, and he needs me. And she said, "Well, the master doesn't really, that's not the case." But then the master, you know, the man who lives there, has the servant, he hears the voice and says, "Oh, show him on in." And turns out he's Catholic, but he hasn't been to Mass in years, and everything seems to be okay. But they sit down, the priest takes the opportunity to have a long conversation with him. By the end of the evening, he says, "I want to come back to Mass." Wow. And has a confession. And so the priest says, "Okay, if you're really serious, you'll be at Mass 6 o'clock in the morning. I'm, you know, just down the street." That, and 6 o'clock comes the next morning. The man doesn't come. And the priest thinks, "Well, maybe he wasn't serious, but I'm going to go back to the house." He goes back to the place, like probably like a townhome. Knocks on the door. The servant comes out. Her eyes are all swollen. She's dressed in black, and she says, "He died last night."
Wow.
And so he's talking to her. And then he looks on the mantle where he hadn't looked before, and there's a picture of the woman who had led him there. And he said, "That woman, who is that?" And she said, "That was my master's mother." And he said, "Well, does she live around here?" She said, "No, she's been dead for years."
Wow.
And this is not just kind of some kind of legend or something. This was collected personally by the man who was collecting stories from first-person testimonies. But that's one example of how, if God allows it, it's... she's there in order to help her son. God has allowed it for that reason.
And no, I know a nun who listens to the radio program and has been here. I won't give her name just because she shared a confidential story. I think it was confidential. She was a young nun who went into this convent, right? And she was up, I think, on the third floor of this particular convent. And she saw an apparitional figure. She saw an old nun basically walking down this hallway towards her. And she just thought it was a nun, and she didn't know what was going on. And the nun walked right through her. It was a spirit. It was a ghost that she saw. So she was kind of spooked by this, of course. Who wouldn't be, right? So she goes down and she talks to some of the other nuns, and she says, "Did anybody die in the convent here or upstairs at all?" And they had shared the story of an older nun who had passed away up there. Well, this young nun actually saw her and went ahead and had masses. And I think the sightings then stopped when that was done. But literally, she saw this nun. She knew nothing about the history, knew nothing about who it was. I think they showed her a picture of her as well, and they recognized who the particular sister was. And apparently, she must have needed more masses or more prayers, I think, to be freed, you know, from purgatory. And sometimes I think these spirits God allows to manifest like that, so prayers can be offered. And
is why I always encourage people, if they've had, you know, an apparition, you know, seen that person of that sort, I say the first thing to do is have masses said for that person, because if it is a deceased spirit, that's almost sure that's why God allowed you to see them.
Yeah, that's for sure. My guest today is
Doctor.
Hold on, Doctor. Let me open the phones, and I want to hear your story. But if you want to join us, I will open the phone. So feel free to dial in if you've got a question, you need clarity on something. The lines are open for you right now. I'll let you dial in at 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. It can be very confusing, this topic. In this time of year, you see a lot of stuff on television, and there's a lot being promulgated. Not all of it, I think, syncs with our faith, and we're just here to try to bring some clarity to it. We're not to be afraid of this. A lot of prominent cases, as Dr. Thigpen is pointing out, the Pope Benedict, I think, the 7th for a long while, after his death, allegedly appeared to a bishop in the area. He's even said that St. Thomas Aquinas saw his deceased sister. So Padre Pio, of course, visited by thousands of purgatorial souls and much more. But, Doctor, go right ahead. I love your story. Share another one.
I was going to say St. John Bosco. It's one of my favorite, you know, Catholic ghost stories. And he reported himself, so this is not a legend, that when he was in seminary, his best friend was, you know, another in seminary, another seminarian, and he made a pact. Now, this would have been like the late 1800s, so it's not really so long ago. He was born, in fact, 88, so probably would have been early 1900s. But anyway, he died in 88, so right before that, a little while before that. But anyway, he made a pact with his friend that whichever one died first, if the Lord would let them, would give a sign, come back and give a sign to the other one that he had been saved. So they made the pact. And then the other friend did die. And after the funeral, the seminarians were, you know, in grief, and they were back in the dorm kind of structure that they had, sitting and talking. And that night, all of a sudden, the door comes busting open into this area, this dorm area. And this iridescent light, it doesn't look like a person, but it's an iridescent light, just shimmering, standing in the doorway. And it says, crawls out, Bosco, Bosco, I am saved. And then it disappeared. And I love it, the way you said it's such a dry thing, the way he puts it. St. John Bosco says, and there was nothing else talked about in the seminary for the next 2 weeks.
Because they all thought. Awesome.
Yeah,
that is awesome. All right, we'll take a few calls for you here too. I just got an email from somebody, and it's a great question. They asked, "How do you discern between a ghost and maybe an angelic being?" And I think that's a great question because these manifestations might be, you know, this is a demon as a fallen angel. Perhaps an angel of light can also appear at times in trial, and people sometimes broad brush these manifestations as with the term ghost, when there really should be a difference.
Yeah, I think, if it were a good angel, first of all, you have, you know, often what happens with a good angel is that it's so overpowering and so bright and so sense of holiness that people fall flat on their faces, you know. I mean, that's one reason why we know the special status of Our Lady is that she didn't do that when the angel Gabriel showed up to her. In fact, he showed deference to her. But, so I think, you know, most of the time it's going to be an angel. It could be that sometimes you have, you know, seem to be angels like showing up talking to Abraham, although that could have been the Trinity manifesting in a theophany, but where they look human and you have visions even in Daniel, you know, and they'll talk about one who looked like a man doing this. You get that in the New Testament even, how these men appeared and talked after, you know, told them. And of course, Jesus has been risen to heaven because he had said it had happened. But we know they're not really men, they're angels. But I think that, you know, the key thing is discerning when they're fallen angels, like you said, when they have those kinds of things. And we can learn some lessons from people like St. Padre Pio. He had one time was supposed to be meeting with a spiritual director, and Knock came at his door, who was also one of his professors, and Knock came at his door, and he shouldn't have been that early, but, you know, looked like the professor. And he kind of had his concerns, but he didn't feel peace about it. But anyway, he ended up saying to the apparition that looked just like another person, you know, that he knew, he told him, say, blessed be Jesus. Say, blessed be Mary. And the thing refused to do it. And I've heard of other cases of that, where they'll just say, blessed be, or blessed be, but they won't say the name of Jesus or Mary. So that's a really good, I mean, you don't want to try to get into conversations with these things, but if you're pressed into that, that's one of the best tests right away. If that thing that you see can't bless the name of, say the name of Jesus or Mary, you don't want anything to do with it.
No, that's for sure. All right. One other thought here, just on the angelic aspect of this. I think it was, I forget who said this, but the St. Ignatius of Loyola, I think. He says, you know, often if it is a good spirit, if it's an angel of some sort, there are signs of God and his angels. And those are feelings of peace and joy. And, you know, it is proper for God and his angels and their movements to give true spiritual gladness, you know, taking away those disturbances. I often think these demonic manifestations are those ones that fill you with fear and with dread. And that means perhaps even a ghost, I'm assuming, could in fact be misinterpreted as an angel. I wouldn't say it is an angel because I think they're different. But as you point out, those purgatorial souls, more than anything, I think are what more people interpret as ghosts than anything else. All right, let's take a call or two. 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. Let's start with Angela, listening in Newport, Rhode Island. Hi, Angela. Good afternoon.
Hi, Drew. Thanks for taking my call.
You got
You're enjoying
it.
Our autumn.
Oh,
listen, I have been meaning to say this to publicly. My daughter lived in an old mill house in Rhode Island, and from the day she moved in, there were problems. The apartment would never warm up, no matter how much heat she had on. There was always a chill. She had a cat. Her cat would never go into her bedroom, never. And this was a cat that, you know, had no issues. My daughter was always sick. She was always on the verge of being sick. She would hear intermittent, random, on occasion, a voice telling her to kill herself. And my daughter wasn't suicidal. She wasn't on medication, drugs. You know, no health issues before that, and it was escalating, and finally she had to leave. And fortunately, and I still get goosebumps because I'm not one who believes in these things. Frankly, It's just not something that it would enter my mind. We learned that many years earlier, right outside this house, there was a bus stop. And the children, two of the children who lived in this house, were run down by a vehicle on that main street. And we believe it was a malevolent ghost that was living in that house and really demonic over what had happened, maybe to their children. What do you think?
All right. Doctor, your thoughts. Go ahead, and I'll follow up on you.
Yeah, I'll have to say, again, defining ghosts the way we did, it's not it's different from a demon. I don't think you're going to have malevolent ghosts, departed spirits that are going to come haunt a place like that. When it's something evil, then I think almost certainly that it's a demonic spirit counterfeiting a deceased spirit. So I would think it'd be more likely that if, for instance, I don't know if there was malice in the driver who ran over the kids, but if something demonic was driving him, that same demonic power then would take advantage of that situation to stay in the house, to be a malicious influence in the house.
I would tend to agree with that because I was actually reading before the broadcast about this very issue that certain spirits, they gravitate to, they're drawn to places where there has been conjuring, where people have, where there's been tremendous acts of evil and other types of things. They're almost drawn to that in some way, and then they can inhabit and manifest in such a way. So I would definitely think that, that spirit was a demonic spirit that was manifesting. And, sometimes you see this happen in places where abuse took place, where the occult was practiced and things along those lines. We have to be really careful when we deal with this type of stuff as well. You got to be very careful never to initiate communication. The church is very clear. Scripture is clear on necromancy, which is condemned, never communicating with the dead like that. Because if there is a spiritual factor behind the problem, it could be from the dark side. It could be a demon. And, I think prudence in all this should be paramount with everyone. Hey, all right, let me it's looking at the clock here. We'll take more of your calls when I return, 888-914-9149. Your book, the Spiritual Warfare Manual, people want to get that, and that's a great thing to keep. If they have disturbances in their home or they feel something is going, there's some powerful prayers there. How can they get connected to that, Doctor?
Easiest way is to go to tanbooks.com. Tan Publishers, the folks who published it. You can also go to Amazon, or you can get it at your local Catholic bookstore.
All right. When we return, we'll talk more. Taking a look, I guess, this Halloween week at the reality of ghosts. What is their nature? What does the church teach? What have our church fathers had to say? What kind of encounters have the saints had? You've got a question or a comment or some insight, You want to join the conversation, pull up a chair. You can dial in now, 888-914-9149. The Relevant Radio Studio line is sponsored by Catholic Order of Foresters. Information about employment opportunities and their flexible premium life insurance plans available at relevantradio.com/Forrester.
It's Halloween week. This is The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
The Drew Mariani Show.
Connect to the conversation at 888-914-9149.
All right, great to be here with you today, taking a look at a reality. I know many poo-poo this idea. They dispel it. Do you believe in ghosts? I do. I believe they're a reality. I think they can be a couple different things. How we view that and interpret that, I think that's the important thing. We try to define our terms in the last half hour. But there's another thing. You know, there's several mediums. You got the medium to the star, the Long Island medium. You got John Edwards, a lot of these people. You know, sometimes I believe spirits can be familiar spirits. And we got to be careful. You really have to be careful with a lot of this type of stuff. Sometimes, and there was a guy who worked on the demons of Brownsville Road, a guy named Adam Bly. He was a theological advisor and an expert in demonology and exorcism in the Diocese of Pittsburgh. And he came out with a new book. I think it's called Hauntings, Possessions, and Exorcism. And he talks about all this stuff, the purgatorial souls and ghosts and that type of stuff. But sometimes he wrote in this book that these spirits can, you know, mimic others. And he cautioned people. And this might be the case. Demons can take advantage of a known suicide or a murder and can pose as that particular victim. They're attracted to places where people have attempted to communicate with spirits, he says. You know, once demons gain the right to be extraordinarily active in a place, they often pretend to be human spirits seeking that type of communication. I think this is one of the great deceptions, and this is one of the great dangers. This is why the church warns you not to dabble in this, not to communicate with spirits. I'm joined this afternoon by somebody who knows this intimately. It's great to have with me Dr. Paul Thigpen, an award-winning journalist, best-selling author. His book, I know several people are calling, asking about, is called A Manual for Spiritual Warfare. A Manual for Spiritual Warfare. He also wrote a book called Saints Who Battled Satan. That's two of about 50 books that he wrote. And he's here today just to take your calls and to give us some perspective on this great mystery. And doctor, let's talk about those familiar spirits, because this is a real danger. I know many people who go to fortune tellers or psychics, or they go to seances, they play with Ouija boards, and a person who committed suicide or died in a tragic accident is suddenly communicating with these family members, are sometimes communicating with souls, and that really has them hooked. Explain that phenomena, if you will.
Yeah, it's easy to understand. Someone's grieving over the loss of someone that, you know, was close to them, a loved one. And there's this desire in their heart that, oh, if only I could say another word to them. If only I could tell them I love them. Only if I could hear what happened, you know, just if only we could communicate. And so the enemy takes advantage, and that he will set up counterfeits in that situation. It's an old enough phenomenon. It's got a common term for it, the familiar spirit, as you said, which is referring to, among other things, that the spirit is familiar with the life of the person that it's going to counterfeit. And so that a spirit can be assigned to someone throughout his life to watch carefully everything that he says and does. And, of course, they have remarkable memories and intelligence. They can remember it all so that they know in and out about that person's life, even things that nobody else would know because they're watching them even when they're alone. Mm-hmm. And then when that person dies, that kind of familiar spirit can try to convince the bereaved loved ones who are just grasping at any straw to still communicate that they are the deceased spirit of that person. Yeah. And if the person tries to test it, you know, they'll say, like, think of one example I'd heard about where a woman loses her husband. She's grieving deeply. One night she sees an apparition that looks like her husband. And of course, demons can, you know, make themselves look like whatever. And she begins to talk to him. And then she says, well, if you're really my husband, you'll know where you put the will, because I couldn't find it. I can't find it. And he says, well, you know, look in this particular drawer in that particular room of that chest of drawers and you'll find it. and she goes and looks, and it's there. So immediately she thinks he's the only one who could have known that it must be him. But the truth is, the demon knew too. You know, he was familiar with, he watched what the man had done. But that's enough to get her thinking that it really is her deceased husband.
Yeah.
And now he's got an end to her life. He can start influencing her. He can start telling her to do things or not to do things contrary to God's will. And she'll believe that, you know, he is who he said he is. And then when you get someone who's into necromancy, trying to contact the spirits of the dead, it's an old thing. You get it there in the Bible with that Witch of Endor we mentioned before, all the way up to present day with people claiming to be able to channel spirits, as they call it. They're not channeling. I mean, the one in the Bible might be because it keeps referring to it as Samuel rather than a demon. But the modern ones are definitely demonic.
Yep.
They're fooling people.
Yeah, unbelievable stuff. Let's take a few calls. 888-914-9149. That's why, a cautionary note. I'm going to talk about this a little later in the week. We'll talk about mediums as well. Very popular today. A lot of people are going to them. I think that is a real danger, and you can easily be deceived. But I'll break that down for you in greater detail coming up. Chicago, Illinois is on deck. If you want to join us, by the way, 888-914-9149. Dan, thanks for your patience. Good afternoon.
Yes, hi. Good afternoon.
Hi. Go right ahead.
Yes. Yeah. So we live in a two flat, and we've got fantastic neighbors that live upstairs. And in learning more about them, we find that they have a Ouija board in their home. And now they have sworn up and down that they have not messed with it. To their knowledge, their kids have not messed with it. Now, my wife is extremely sensitive to spirit. And when she heard about this, she freaked out and says, you've got to destroy it. So my question is, how do you properly get rid of a Ouija board?
That's a great question. Doctor, I'll let you respond. But what I've had this conversation with priests and exorcists in the past. Personally, if it was in my home or somebody had to do it, I'd burn it. I would definitely burn it. Others have tried dousing it with water and throwing it away into holy water and getting rid of it. But I'd actually destroy it. I would definitely do that. Then I'd have that home blessed. But doctor, I'll let you respond.
Okay.
Yeah, that would be my approach to. In fact, I would probably put holy water first, and then I would burn it. You don't want, if you just throw it away, somebody might find it in the trash. So you want the thing destroyed.
Yeah.
And if you look at, here's the scriptural example. You look in the book of Acts, and there was a group of people who heard the preaching of the apostles, or maybe it was Paul, I don't remember, but heard the preaching and wanted to become Christians. And after they did, the first thing they did is take all of their occult paraphernalia and they burned it.
Wow.
So that seems to me a very good precedent for doing just that. The fact that, even she says the neighbors say we never use it, it doesn't matter. It is by its nature associated with demonic powers, and it's an open door.
I remember hearing a story one time of a person that moved into an apartment, and they had a beautiful relationship, husband and wife. They're newly married. They had a kid. After they moved to the home, the husband changed. They don't know what the heck happened to him. Things just radically changed. And a spirit of division entered that home. They would fight. The anger would intensify. It eventually became violent. So at one point in time, trying to work through this and these marital problems, what's going on, they couldn't understand how things had changed. They were removing one of the walls to open up the apartment to give them more of an open kind of concept. And as they broke down one of the walls, there boarded up in the wall behind the drywall was a Ouija board. So they actually got rid of that Ouija board, destroyed it, had the home blessed, and the entire relationship changed again. I know another person whose home burned down to the ground. They showed me a picture of the burned home. In the closet of this home, the only thing that survived was the Ouija board. So I want to caution anybody who dabbles with this type of stuff, get rid of it. The story of The Exorcist, the famous movie in the 70s, it's actually a true story. And the way the spirits entered into that situation were through the people playing with the Ouija board. So if you have any of this occult stuff, do as the doctor said, burn it, get rid of it. Dangerous, dangerous stuff. Our next call, Maria in New Jersey is joining us. Hi, Maria. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My question was, can a spirit come back and ask for forgiveness? My father passed away 10 years ago, and a few years back I was at my mom's home sleeping there, and I just felt something tugging on me, and it almost felt like I was awake, and it was my father asking for forgiveness. And I kind of just brushed it off, and I was like, sure, I forgive you. But he kept insisting that I forgive him and tell him what I forgave him for. He was an alcoholic, and we didn't have a close relationship. But it was a dream, but it just felt so real that he really needed that forgiveness to move on.
Okay. Doctor, you want to go?
I certainly think that that could very well be what it was. I mean, it could be just the Lord working with your memory and your imagination and your dream. But I think we have that example I mentioned a while ago in the Old Testament where God allows one of the Old Testament, say two of them, to come back to someone in a dream and to speak to them. And especially since the fruit of it was so good, be different if you someone claiming to be your father showed up in a dream and said, now I want you to go, hurt somebody or something. But the fact that he was asking for forgiveness and persistent, that right there tells me that the fruit of it was good spiritual fruit. So whether it was actually him or whether God just allowed you to dream about him in a way that would prompt you to forgive him, either way, that's good. That's wonderful.
Yeah, and my sense, Maria, is, God is always reaching out to us. And perhaps your father's in purgatory. Perhaps he needs a mass offered. Perhaps he needs some rosaries. Perhaps he is seeking you to forgive him, I would think, more than anything else, that is really a grace from God. He's probably a purgatorial soul. Pray for your father. Let him know you've forgiven him and have mass said for him as well. And doctor, I guess this goes for a lot of people. If our parents, our loved ones, our spouses, our siblings, whoever it is, has hurt us and they've gone on before us and we're harboring an unforgiveness or a grudge against them, I think a great act of charity and mercy would be to forgive them, and to pray for their souls in particular. So
it'll corrode our souls if we don't.
That's right.
So yes, we have to let go of that. It doesn't mean that we think it never happened or act like it never happened, but we let go of it and say, I give this over to God.
Right.
I will not let this, continue to stay between us. And that's a beautiful thing, I think. I mean, it's a letting go. That's what the word in the Greek means, to let go, to forgive, to let go. And in a sense, you're letting go of that person who may very well have some bonds in the purgatorial process that you're the one who can let go, can free
him. Well, doctor, I'll tell you what, let me do this. I have to take a short pause. When we come back, we'll talk more. In fact, I'll share something I stumbled across just recently regarding Ted Bundy, and I'd like to get your take on this as well. If you're just tuning in, we're talking about ghosts. What does the church teach? How are we to view these entities? Again, if you've got a question or comment, you can always join us. 888-914-9149. My guest is Dr. Paul Thigpen. Grab a pen and paper, too. I'll give you a couple of his books. He might want to recommend something else, but I love The Manual for Spiritual Warfare. That's a must. I have it. You might also want to check out Saints Who Battled Satan. Some great reads from him. You can go to Tan Books and check those out. About 14 now before the top of the hour. Our conversation continues in just a couple seconds. Stay with me.
The Drew Mariani Show. Relevant Radio. Stay with us. It's Halloween week.
The Relevant Radio studio line is sponsored by Catholic Order of Foresters. Information about employment opportunities and their flexible premium life insurance plans available at relevantradio.com/Forrester.
It's the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
It's Halloween week.
All right, welcome back. Good to be here with you. Yeah, it's Halloween week. I'll give you a look at a lot of this type of stuff today, tomorrow. In fact, I just put up a Twitter poll, and I hope you're following us on our social media platform. Stay connected with us there at Drew Mariani, at Drew Mariani Show. You'll find us there. And Jake just put up a poll saying, do you believe in ghosts? I'd love to hear. So far, 71% who've taken the Twitter poll say, yeah, we believe in ghosts. Yeah, I do. I do. Feel free to sound off also at Facebook. You can follow us at, Facebook.com, keyword The Drew Mariani Show. You'll find us all there. Let me share something with you, doctor, and then I want to grab some more phone calls for you here. I was reading over the weekend just a little bit about ghosts, and these mediums you talk about, familiar spirits and things along those lines. Mm-hmm. Again, scripture. You got Isaiah, you've got Matthew, you've got a lot of different places where we have kind of these references to these spirits and to these ghosts. And I want to caution everyone as we talk about this, We shouldn't dabble. We shouldn't conjure. We shouldn't try to communicate with the dead. You got to be very careful. But we were talking about this one woman who says, you know, I wonder if there's a malevolent, a demonic, you know, spirit of some sort that could manifest something. Ted Bundy, it was really interesting. I had read recently that Ted Bundy, who, by the way, if you don't know who he is, folks, he's one of the arguably the most notorious serial killer in America. Somebody had bought his home. A contractor recently bought his home and remodeled it. I think he lived in Washington State. And the contractor said it was full of all sorts of creepy occurrences. He basically, you know, according to the research that was done, the house was shared by this young Ted Bundy, his mother and his stepfather and his siblings in the homes. And they claimed there were mysterious ghosts, you know, ghostly activity in the home, the toppling of furniture, other strange happenings, you know. And then when the contractor got into the home, that's exactly what happened. Equipment would be flipped and all sorts of weird things that would happen. And I wonder if these spirits were evil that were in his home and somehow affected Ted Bundy and helped to foment or at least, you know, encourage him to go down that path of lust and murder. You know, we know that was indeed the case. So, but your thoughts on that? Can spirits in a home follow us from place to place? Can a ghost go from one place to another? Can they influence, perhaps, or I should really say a spirit, one's behavior?
Yeah, I think there are plenty of accounts of that. Sometimes in what we call an infestation, the home itself, you know, for some reason, the demonic powers are being associated with that so that whoever comes into it, you know, is in trouble. But you get plenty of other reports where the person there has the trouble, and then when they move, it goes with them. And so I don't know if there's specific names for that or not, but I think there's plenty of, counts, evidence that can happen. I would be, you know, given the story of his life, I would be surprised if there weren't some kind of demonic influence within him. And if that kind of thing was happening when he was growing up, I think it's likely, you know.
All right, let's go back to the phones. 888-914-9149. Maria is listening in Chicago. Maria, good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon. I had a very beautiful experience after my mother died. She died in March, and she died of advanced Alzheimer's. Eventually, it was congestive heart failure. But she just had a natural death. She was wearing a scapular. She had the sacraments of the church, like, before she died, like a half hour before. So it really was a very peaceful, natural death. But she wasn't able to say goodbye to me. And a month after her funeral, I had this dream where she appeared to me as a young woman and just ran up to me and gave me a hug and a kiss.
All right,
Doctor.
It made
me feel really consoled. It was a beautiful dream.
Yeah. Right,
I felt it was beautiful. It was her way of saying goodbye, because she couldn't say goodbye as she was dying because she just wasn't able.
All right.
But I've had other dreams about her sins where she was like an older woman again and she was lost. And
Maria, thanks. Just for the purpose of time, let me hold you on that point, because, you know, we're talking ghosts, but dreams, these manifestations, so we've heard several people already, Dr. Colin, regarding them. I do believe God sometimes allows our loved ones to communicate with us, if not in the apparitional form, which I think is rare. I definitely think through dreams like that. Your thoughts on that?
Well, again, we've got the scriptural precedent from the Old Testament, and where we have the prophet Jeremiah and Ananias appear to someone in a dream, and they have a message for them, and one of them, Jeremiah, presents a golden sword. He's appearing to the Maccabee, who's going to be leading, you know, the revolt, and he's bringing comfort and consolation and strength and fortitude. So I think that is, yep, you know, we have, yep, great precedent there. That is something that God allows and right, is pleased with.
All right, let's
go. I would receive it as that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Me too. Let's go to Carla listening in Wisconsin. Carla, thanks for your patience. Good afternoon.
Hello, by the way, I love your radio station. It's the only one that I keep on my house and in my car.
All right. That's great. Thank you for doing that.
All right. Now, a number of years ago, probably about 40 years ago or so. My husband, God rest his crazy old man soul, and I were staying in the motel, and the door opened. Door was locked, but the door opened. A woman walked in, smiled. It was sort of a sad smile. She walked over to the window and stood there for several minutes, turned around and smiled at us again. It was sort of a sad smile. But when she went out the door wasn't really open wide enough for a person to really walk out. It was like she sort of half walked out, half walked through the door. And I questioned the gal at the desk about it, and she said it sounded like a woman who had died in that room about a year or so before.
Wow.
And I was just curious. So what I will,
I would say in that case,
there was no fear. I felt no fear.
Well,
my husband later said it was all our imagination.
No, it wasn't your imagination. I'll tell you what, Carl, that's not your imagination. I was reading about this doctor, and you can talk about that as well. You know, these evil type of spirits, these manifestations, that they'll instill fear and dread and all sorts of other things into people. I think that was a purgatorial soul. Again, when these encounters happen, I think God is so merciful. It may be an opportunity for you and your husband to pray for that girl, especially now that you have the link. A year ago, the woman died. So, you know, you saw her, looks like her. I bet she was reaching out for prayers. But Dr. Thigpen, your thoughts?
Well, I would just say in that situation, the first thing I would do is go to a parish and arrange to have a mass said for that person. Even if you don't know her name, if they don't know, you know, what to say, then just say, I want a mass for my special intention, and you'll know what it is. If God allows someone like that to be seen by us, then I think almost certainly it's because they need their prayers.
You got it. Dana's listening in Indiana. Hi, Dana. Good afternoon.
Hi. Good afternoon, Drew and Dr. Thigpen. I just have a quick thing. I don't know if you've ever experienced this before, but my friends, someone gave one of them a Book of Mormon, and they had it in their dorm room. And then they started, both getting sick, and there was a strain on their friendship, but they were both super irritable with each other, and they couldn't explain why.
Yeah.
And then one of them noticed it, and they threw it away. And immediately after that, everything was fine, and they started getting better, and they were okay with each other after that. It was just kind of a weird thing.
That is strange, Dana. I've never heard that before with the Book of Mormon, but Dr. Ken, objects carry with them a darkness, a spiritual grit that can bring about that spirit of division. I shared the story of the Ouija board. Now, clearly, that's an occult object. But your thoughts, if you could share what you think.
Sure. Something, a book, an object that's been cursed, that the curses have real power, just the blessings have real power.
Yeah.
So it's just called an infestation. When you speak of an infestation, you're either talking about a location with which demonic power seems to be associated or an object.
Right.
And so that would be a case of infestation if that's where it were.
Yeah, it's fascinating. So I have less than a minute. My apologies to everyone who's patiently waiting to join us. Doctor, if people want to read more about this or at least get your manual for spiritual warfare, and I know you've got a spiritual warfare Bible as well. How can people track it down? What would you recommend?
Yeah, three sources I'd say. Either go to tanbooks.com. Tan publishes them. Or go to amazon.com. They're all on there. Or go to your local Catholic bookstore. They've always got great stuff there.
I love it. Well said. That's Dr. Paul Thigpen. Check him out.
Our spiritual director, Father Michael Hurley, a Dominican priest in the Archdiocese of San Francisco, talking about finding time for silence in our lives.
The Inner Life with Josh Raymond.
Now, what if that silence scares us, Father? If somebody's listening and saying, I don't want to be in that silence, any good advice for them?
Yeah, Nike, just do it. What scares us is the isolation. And the reality, though, is that being distracted and being kind of immersing ourselves in the exterior world can be more isolating than we realize. We think we're connecting, but we're not really connecting. True connection is a language of love. And so to, in a sense, embrace the fear of isolation, or at least the challenge of isolation, because on the other side, like walking through the doorway, like death itself, is the fullness of God's presence, if we are bold and courageous enough to enter into that silence.
I love that.
The Inner Life with Josh Raymond, weekdays at 11 a.m. Central on Relevant Radio.
Hey. And Halloween, the Eve of All Hallows, it was a celebration of the victory of life over death. November is the month when we remember the holy souls, the souls in purgatory.
I hope you'll join us. A novena is going to kick off on November 2nd. It's going to run through November 10th. It's a novena for your departed loved one.
At Mass, the Chaplet of Divine Mercy, and then again with Father Rocky on the Family Rosary Across America. Submit all the names of your family and friends.
Online at relevantradio.com/souls.